Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
As Jessica Lamb Shapiro points out in her new book, Promised Land, My Journey Through America's Self-Help Culture, everyone is affected by self-help, an industry that generates $1 billion a year. By trading in the many aphorisms that we encounter every day in the media, on coffee mugs and t-shirts, and in conversation with family and friends. Raised by a child psychologist who is the author of numerous self-help books, Lamb Shapiro found herself at once repelled and fascinated by the industry to which her father had contributed so much. Did all these books, tapes, and weekend seminars really help anyone? Why do some people swear by the power of positive thinking while others dismiss it as hokum? It is a great pleasure to welcome Jessica Lamb Shapiro to our program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you having me.
What got you in thinking about this in such a serious way of looking at not only your personal story, but to take it a step further and to do some real reporting and say, okay, what's going on here?
Well, it happened by accident. My dad, like you said, had been writing self-help books for a long time, but he'd never been hugely successful, like to the level of Dr. Phil or Dr. Oz. And he heard about a weekend conference that was being taught by the co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul. So when he told me that he was going, I was really intrigued because I thought, why is my dad, who has written all these books, going to learn how to write self-help books? And he invited me to go, and I just thought it would be kind of a funny, interesting experience. And I like to go places with my dad. We travel together. So, you know, I wasn't even really thinking of writing about it. And then when I got there, I was so surprised by how really into it people were. They were very emotional. They were crying. They were doing all sorts of really strange things, like drawing smiley faces on each other's index fingers. And it was a room of 600 adults. And I just kept thinking, what is happening here that all these adults are so emotional and doing all these strange things? It felt like some sort of voodoo was at work. And I got really fascinated by it.
And that sort of that question of why are they famous and your father isn't, right?
Yeah, exactly.
When you look at the actual questions that you wanted to answer, what was the top of your list?
Well, the top of my list was, does self-help work? I was completely unsuccessful in answering that question. I wanted it to be good or bad and make some kind of definitive statement, but it's just too vast a world, and there's good self-help books and there's bad self-help books, and I wasn't really able to come down on one side either way. And that's when I really turned to the personal story, because I felt like that was something I actually could speak to, and that was where my stake in it really lie.
So were you, I mean, having been brought up in this culture, and as I mentioned in the introduction of both understanding it and then being repelled by it, did you want to go in with your eyes as open as possible?
I absolutely did. I was cynical and I was skeptical, and I couldn't help where I started out, but I just knew it would be a really boring book and also really a boring exercise for me personally to just go in and make fun of everything. That just didn't seem nuanced or complicated or particularly sophisticated way to approach this world.
How much of this world do you think is personality?
A lot of it. You know, I think that some people are really compelling and they have compelling personal stories. Do you mean on the side of the people who are giving the self-help or the people who are receiving it?
A little bit of both, but more to the people who are giving it. The people, as you mentioned, Dr. Phil, the difference between Dr. Phil and someone else who is doing this type of work.
You know, it's so hard to say. I think that the people who are really successful are somewhat sensationalist. One of the things my dad doesn't like about Dr. Phil is that he tends to have just really extreme examples of people on his show. And he told me about watching one show where he told a woman that her son was a psychopath and probably going to be a future serial killer. And that's something that my dad as a child psychologist would never say to a parent, at least based on the evidence that had been presented on the show. So, you know, to some extent, they're entertainers as much as they are self-help practitioners.
And a lot of this, obviously, can be inspirational and very useful, but it is being used on people who by and large, let's just say in very general terms, are vulnerable. Is that safe to say?
Absolutely. I mean, that's really the dark side of self-help, is that people are making money off of people's helplessness and insecurities and problems.
When you think about that, so like any science, like any form of medicine, there are the good, there are the bad, and there are the question marks. And I guess what differentiates this in many ways is because it's such an industry, right?
Yes, definitely. And it's also completely unregulated. I mean, even with other sciences, you're expected to have certain degrees, or the medical establishment. There are certainly some crazy medical theories, but those people have medical degrees. Whereas self-help, you know, you could write a book. I could write a book. My dog could write a book. It's not in any way regulated. And you do often get people who have done studies, who've studied things for years and years, who have gone to school, but you also get people who just had an idea and decided to write a book.
When you took on this project, you started to read a lot and you went to a lot of seminars. You even ended up walking on hot coals for a reason I'm still not exactly sure why you
did
it. But that's a self-help thing, right? You're supposed to be able to block out the pain and just because you're focused on something else, right?
It is, exactly. It's part of a whole kind of positive thinking, mind over matter exercise, where you tell yourself that you're not going to get burned and you have what they call an intention. I'm still not entirely clear what an intention is, but it seems to be kind of like a mantra or something that you tell yourself that's going to protect your feet from the fire. In that particular case, the reason you don't get burned is actually physics. But even knowing that, I felt that it still required a lot of bravery for me, and I'm personally afraid of a lot of things, to actually walk on hot coals.
So has the book and looking at all of this changed you in regards to this idea of self-help?
In a sense, it has. I started out completely cynical and skeptical, and I think I've moved, you know, a little bit towards embracing self-help. I don't say that I embrace it wholeheartedly. I think there's a lot of charlatans out there. There's a lot of really terrible ideas. But I guess I appreciate the idea of self-help, if not actually the practice of it.
And also, we should mention that this book is very much a personal story as well. You have your own questions about your own life and your own relationships that you're looking to answer.
Yes, definitely. I was very afraid of flying, so I used the book as an opportunity to try to not be afraid of flying. And my mother had died when I was a very young child, and my father and I hadn't really dealt with that. So I used the book as an opportunity to kind of test some of the self-help books on grieving and some of the things that were on offer.
You say in the book, in fact, it's on the book jacket, I've been writing this book, I walked on hot coals, met a man making a weight loss robot, joined a healing circle, and faced my debilitating fear of flying. Of all of these things, talking to my father about my mother's death was by far the hardest, assuming because it's the most personal.
Yeah, exactly, because it's the most personal. And also because it just had been so many years that we developed a habit of not talking about it. You know, I don't know exactly how that came about. I think it's because I was so young, it wasn't really appropriate to talk about. But then time went on, and here I am in my 30s, and we still haven't really talked about it. And it's hard to know how to break those kinds of contracts in families where it's established that here's this thing we don't talk about, and yet, you know, I started to feel that it was actually very important for us to deal with.
And this is where, I would assume, where often self-help can come in handy in helping you break down some of those walls, if done correctly.
In a sense, yeah. Some of the books that I read were really helpful to me in giving me information that I could then bring to my dad. On the other hand, I was really astounded to discover my own capacity for self-deceit, because I basically worked on this book about self-help for years before I even realized that I was going to be talking about anything personal. And then once I did realize it, it suddenly seemed so inevitable. But I really had kind of blinded myself to that fact. So that kind of made me wonder, you know, how much can self-help work if we can't even understand ourselves or see what we're really looking for?
Right. Do you think writing the book, assuming that he's read it, do you think writing the book helped your father understand you a little bit better?
I think it did. I think, I mean, he has read it, but even that was recently, and even before he read it, just my coming to him with certain questions and us having certain conversations. And we went to visit my mother's grave for the first time, which we'd never done before in 30 years. That was all really helpful in my dad understanding me and in kind of deepening and strengthening our relationship.
If the book has a goal or a purpose, what do you hope it is?
I feel like the book has already fulfilled its purpose for me, which was to kind of think about these ideas with my mother and talk to my father about them. That was really the journey for me. In terms of, you know, whether or not it can help other people or make other people think certain things. I mean, I'd like people to be able to suspend their disbelief about self-help and kind of think about the ways that self-help is just part of our culture and not have such a knee-jerk reaction as, you know, this is good or this is bad. So, you know, I would like it to kind of open up a dialogue about the ways that it's part of our culture.
The name of the book is Promised Land, My Journey Through America's Self-Help Culture. It is a memoir by Jessica Lam Shapiro. The book is published by Simon & Schuster. Jessica, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Promised Land. It is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.